Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. If you're a fan of Bravo TV's Top Chef, you may have already been rooting for our very own Louisiana-born Chef Isaac Toups. 5 episodes into Top Chef's 13th season, Isaac is holding his own. We'll get the behind-the-scenes scoop from Isaac, and then we'll head to Shreveport to hear from Carolyn Simmons of Blue to hear how she won a very special James Beard Award before the award season even begins. Then we'll talk with 2012 James Beard Award-winning pastry chef Mindy Siegel of Hot Chocolate. Mindy is the first James Beard winner to partner with a medical marijuana lab. Marketed under her name, Mindy's new edibles are groundbreaking territory for a James Beard Award winner. And Max Messier of Cocktail & Sons joins us with a king cake syrup he's just created that could put a whole new spin on your Mardi Gras season. We're dropping names and winning awards on this week's Louisiana Eats. I am a self-confessed Top Chef junkie. It's always extra fun when we've got a homegrown Louisiana chef to root for. And this season, Chef Isaac Toups of Toups Meadery is taking it over the top as he brilliantly wings it through some styles of cuisine and ingredients that are relatively alien to that bayou boy. 5 shows in, he's doing us proud. Here's Isaac with his distinctive take on what's going on against this season's California backdrop. First of all, let me just say, you and me and your darling wife, we've been really good friends for a really long time. And Toups is like one of my clubhouses. And so my head is just sort of turned by all of this amazing good fortune that came upon you. So how does Bravo vet you for this? How does this happen? Do you put your name in or do they get in touch with you?
They got in touch with me, and the producers said they had seen a certain Dirty Rice video I did on the internet. We did a video for Tasting Table, and it got around, and one of the producers said, yeah, I saw that. I knew we had to have you. I was upset. In fact, they were actually upset. They were like, where were you in the New Orleans season? I'm like, I don't know. That's your problem, isn't it? where were you?
Yeah,
so, I probably wouldn't have even been able to do it that season. That season we had just opened the restaurant, I'd have probably turned them down.
Yeah.
So it was actually kind of good that they waited for the California season. Also, it was really nice to not see anybody else from Louisiana. I didn't want to have to fight for that Louisiana pull team. So I was kind of surprised I wasn't the only one, but I was relieved that I was the only one.
So you get the spot, and they say, okay, we're flying you to...
Right, we're flying you to Hollywood, okay?
Fly. Of course.
Okay. Wow. And, you know, it's very hush-hush. They don't give you a whole lot of information. They want it to be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
When we meet each other on camera, we really are meeting each other for the first time. They want it to be genuine reaction. And that's what I appreciate about the show. Even though they had to be hush-hush a lot of times, you know, they didn't tell you who was the guest judge was going to be until you saw them so you could get a reaction. And now that I know that, it's like, this is how you make a good show. So while it's annoying sometimes or keep you in the dark, you realize that this is to make a good show and it is to promote the chefs. And I felt they did a good job. They're not really trying to throw anybody under a bus. People do that on their own already.
The thing that's really standing out to me, Isaac, is you. What we're seeing on TV, since I know you, that's the real you. It just warms the cockles of my heart. Plus, you're so quotable. Where are you coming up with that stuff?
Oh, you know me, Poppy. I'm just a smart aleck. I've been smart aleck since day one, and apparently people find that entertaining. And that's another good thing. You know, I keep having these wonderful sound bites that are great, and I'm just like, oh, I said that? I did say that. I'm looking at it. You know, they sit you down for these long interviews afterwards, and then they cherry-pick the best stuff, and it's obvious, like, oh, yeah. I say what I want to say. Mm-hmm. I don't have to pull any punches anymore. I don't work for corporate anymore, you know, or I don't have to worry about the boss. I only worry about my wife slapping me in the head when I say something stupid on TV. So far, I'm only at one.
So how long are you gone at a time? You got Amanda and the babies at home and a restaurant. So what has the time commitment been like?
It was probably about 8 weeks total, give or take. I'm unsure. And it was rough, you know. And being away from the babies, you know, I hadn't been away from my wife for more than a week since the 16 years we've been together. And all of a sudden you're gone for an extended amount of time. You're not there at the restaurants. You're always pairing up at the restaurant. Your babies aren't there. And you're going, I hope the youngest one isn't walking yet. That was an honest fear. I'm like, she's going to walk and I'm going to be going. I'm going to like, But it's worth it. You know what's why it's worth it? It's worth it for the exposure and it's worth it for the advertising. It was also a good challenge to me mentally, physically, and heartly. Is that a word?
Yeah, I know.
Sure, let's go with it. that is like, can I go do this? Can I step outside the realm? Can I step in? Because you leave your house and here's 17 people. Okay, and you're staying with them and you take this ride and one of you's going home each week.
Yeah.
In this weird, awkward style competition, will you be judged? No one trains for this. You know, you can't get ready for it. That's probably a good thing for Bravo. They get some genuine human reaction. But it was awkward. But toward the end, it was more like boarding school. I consider myself friends with nearly everybody on the show. Really, truly, honestly, I can get along with a rock. Trust me, I'll do all the talking.
Well, I want to know how long the days are, because having done enough television myself, there's a lot of hurry up and wait, and then you stand around and you stand around. Was there like makeup every day, and like how much of an experience like that was it?
Only the judges get makeup. You know, they want us to look like we just cooked for 300 people in 2 hours. Which we did, you know. So it's like, it's rough. They want us to look disheveled. If our hair is disheveled, they're like, yeah. So I made sure to keep my hair combed.
yeah, all that hair.
Yeah, all that hair. You know, I've done other filming before. You get there early to make sure everybody's ready to go. And then you shoot the thing. Then you got to do a couple things twice. Standard TV work. I would say anybody who's ever done any TV work, you could have gone like, yeah, it's a show. Do this. Oh, now do this from this angle. And I'll let the camera reset up for that angle. But all in all, pretty very professional.
So what was the most intimidating thing that you went through?
Oh, that was easily being judged by Emeril Lagasse. Emeril Lagasse was a judge a couple of times. And, you know, seeing Boss Man, you know, the guy you called chef for a decade right there in front of you, like, I was fine until you walked up. The only chef that still, you know, intimidates me a little bit. You know, when he walks in the room nowadays, I straighten up. I'm like, oh, you don't work for him anymore. Straighten up anyway. It's Emeril.
And then John Best shows up.
Yeah, John was there. I'm like, okay, there's another guy I know. You know, what happened a lot of times, we get these guest judges and like, oh, man, it's so-and-so. And I go, who's that? And, you know, I get several looks sometimes like, you don't know who that is? I'm like, no. I've had my head down in South Louisiana for 16 years. No, I don't. Should I? I should? Oh, well.
Well, were you ever starstruck?
I'm not the type of guy who sees a big famous person and gets all googly woogly, but yeah, you know, there's some impressive line of judges to come, and you know, working with Emeril Lagasse showed me that, you know, these people are still people, you still treat them like people. You don't get all freaky on them. That's not what they want. Just treat them like a normal person, and you know, working for Emeril just proves that. You know,
and he loved your Kubion that you made.
Yeah.
And that's something else that's been fascinating me, because I've been watching them and how they react to, I'd say, your food, but you're cooking so from home and from heart that you're really cooking our food. You really are. You're cooking the food of South Louisiana, and they love it. They're gobbling it up. But as of the most recent episode, you haven't won yet. That but you're constantly like in the top. So I wonder, how does that feel? Do you feel like, well, at least I'm hanging in there near the top?
Well, it's one of those like, yeah, a win would be great, but not going home is so much better.
Right.
So yeah, being in the top three, yay, I'm in the top three. And I got a little, you know, a little fussy. I'm like, you know, man, I've been in the top a whole bunch. Can't score a win. Come on, bring it home. Can we give it here? And then I look at the guys being sent home after I come off of top three. I see the guys being sent home going, you know, why don't you just shut up and be glad you're still on the show?
out of everything that's gone on, what was the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenges, I will say, were just getting an ingredient that I had never worked with before and not knowing the end result of, you know, what I would do with it. Is this going to work? And then cooking in different scenarios. You know, I'm South Louisiana, man, been here all my life, and we're going to California and cook. And some of the cliches about California are right. You know, they like their microgreens and they like their pretty place and their tweezers. So I wonder, like, is dirty rice going to work for Californians? Is gumbo going to work? Is these things that the couvillon, you know, are people going to be into it? Or are they going to go, this is too rich. It's got too much seafood flavor. It's too bold. You know, we want light. Where's the tofu? But I got to say, most people were extremely receptive from almost everything I did.
Well, I haven't seen him spit anything out on television yet.
Not yet.
When were you the most afraid? So far.
I will say everybody has their ups and downs, and I'm no different from everyone. But so far, probably the most worried I was. I was worried about the uni challenge, just being, you know, making potato salad with uni. You know, I'd eaten uni one time before at this rickety sushi joint somewhere I won't mention. The uni must have been old, and it must have been bad or going bad. And Poppy, eating bad uni is like eating a bad oyster.
Oh, yeah.
A good oyster will change your life, and a bad oyster will change your death. So when I ate that uni way back in the day, I thought, oh, this is what it tastes like. It's supposed to taste like chewy snot. And so you go, okay, get myself ready. I'm like, just eat it. And I take a bite of it, and it's delicious.
Oh, yeah.
It's delicious.
I loved watching you open it because it was obvious that you'd never done that before. Like, the double cleaver method, I think.
In fact, I'm pretty much invented the double cleaver method right then and there. I see everybody else with their little scissors, and we're cutting away. I ain't got time for that.
Whack that thing open.
And just tomahawked a sea urchin. It was great.
And that was one of my favorite quotes because you made it so relatable. And I bet that there's a lot of people who have never had uni. And so what did you do with the uni? You smeared it on some boiled potatoes said, because this tastes like good crab roe.
It does. It was immediately, once I tasted it, I'm like, oh, it's kind of like caviar meets oysters. I got this.
Well, you are really doing an incredible job. How hard has it been to keep all these secrets?
Pretty easy.
It is?
Your
mom and dad aren't beating you up on it?
No. It's kind of an enjoyable kind of torture, not telling everyone. You know, I'm actually like, no, you got to watch. I could tell you I'm not.
Well, I'd like to know what the watching it experience is really like.
Oh, that's the worst. Most of the time I've been watching it live stream, so the first time I'm watching it is the first time everybody else is watching it. It's unnerving, and if I could put it into relation, you know, people out there, have you ever heard yourself in a recording and went, I sound like that? Oh, God, really? That sounds horrible. Multiply that by 100, and you have yourself watching yourself on TV. It's unnerving. I wanted to throw up the whole first episode. I had to get drunk. I was drunk by the end of the first episode at my own bar. Man is like, okay, time to go. I'm fine.
And what's your family's reaction been? What? You got that big old family over in Cajun country. What are they saying?
You ever had a big gnarly pile of unruly cheerleaders? That's what I have. I have a humongous gnarly pile of unruly cheerleaders that were, yeah. I mean, you know, just frothing at the mouth, congratulating me on things that they don't know about. I'm like, yeah, we know you did good. I'm like, no, you don't. But you don't know if I did good. You don't know if I did bad. It has to be a secret.
It has to be a secret. So you were homesick, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yes and no. So I was able to compartmentalize. So I'm on Top Chef. Let's go blow this out the water. Let's do my thing. Let's have some stage presence. Let's make sure I'm not saying anything dumb on camera. Yes, I miss my wife. Yes, I miss my family, my babies. And yes, I miss the restaurant. But I came here knowing that. So let's put that in the back burner and let's full focus on this occasion. Full attention to the task at hand.
Do the job.
Yeah.
Do the job. Well, Isaac, I am so honored that you took the time during this incredibly busy season to sit down and talk with us on Louisiana Eats. And I hope you'll keep us posted. We want to talk to you some more.
Thanks so much, Poppy. I look forward to more meetings.
Chef Isaac Toops of Toops Meadery and contestant on this season of Top Chef. Isaac has promised to keep us up on all future developments during the competition, so stay tuned for his updates on future Louisiana Eats. What is uni? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What is uni? It's the Japanese word for what's commonly referred to as sea urchin roe, but it's actually an endocrine gland that produces the germ cells of an organism. It's actually responsible for making the eggs. Uni is also considered an aphrodisiac by some. It's harvested throughout the world. However, the west coast of the United States is currently one of the largest sources, with much of the prime harvest finding its way overseas to eager Asian customers. Each sea urchin contains 5 lobes, and the harvesting of the uni is a very delicate process as the meat easily falls apart. Usually, chefs take the softball-sized spiny creatures and go into them from the small hole on the underside, carefully cutting in, then emptying the liquid and scooping the bright golden sea urchin out from each of the lobes, keeping them intact. But when Cajun chef Isaac Toops attacked that foreign creature, he just used a double cleaver method that shocked some of his Top Chef competitors. But it's all in the taste, and his take on uni potato salad was real Louisiana Eats. Sweet and lovely girl, I love you. Like so many culinary talents, Carolyn Simmons' entrance into the restaurant world was far from straightforward. Based on an innate sense for Southern cooking and some good luck, Carolyn became an overnight catering success in Shreveport, gracing the many film crews that come through town with her meals. Carolyn quickly leveraged that hard work to open her own establishment, Blue, a smoke and grill restaurant. While on a trip to Shreveport, the Louisiana Eats crew paid a visit to Carolyn's restaurant, where we took in a relaxing morning on her beautiful new deck and heard about her meteoric rise and victory in the James Beard Foundation's Better Burger Project. Upon our arrival at Blue, Carolyn had a delicious breakfast waiting for us.
Okay, anyway, here's the coffee. I got some molasses sugar, but let me go get that so you need some sweetener.
After savoring that amazing Melaton maple brown sugar syrup on pancakes and bacon, we got to talking about Carolyn's journey into the restaurant business. Carolyn, I've heard a lot of interesting stories in my lifetime, but the story of your life's path from beginning to what has led you here to Blue in Shreveport is pretty interesting. So you didn't set out to own a restaurant in life, did you?
No, I didn't. I was raised by a mother who didn't know how to cook. I was raised on TV dinners and frozen pizzas, and I was the math nerd in school. I was raised on things out of cans and things out of boxes. And in third grade, someone invited me to their home and they said they were going to have green beans. I'm like, oh, I hate green beans. But I didn't say it, of course, ever polite Southern girl. And I imagined the mushy things out of a can. Well, they put this plate of food down in front of me, and I don't remember anything else on the plate, but I remember I bit into that crunchy green bean, and I could taste the rain. And I thought, this is what food should taste like. So I started telling my mother, I want to go to the grocery store with you. And I would go to the grocery store and buy food, and I would cook it and ruin it and destroy it and burn it. But then I found she had this old Joy of Cooking cookbook, and I started opening up that cookbook and cooking out of it and teaching myself how to cook. But I had a great thing in my life. I was a military child. My dad was in the Air Force, and a lot of military men marry Korean women and Thai women, German women. So I would sit in people's kitchens. I would say, what are you doing? How are you cooking? And I learned how to cook. So a lot of people notice in my restaurant, there's a lot of Thai food cooked and Korean food and a very international influence. And that's because these are the women that were my mentors and taught me how to cook as a child.
But it took you a while to come around to the idea of cooking as a living. What were your original livelihoods?
Originally, I graduated with a degree in finance and a minor in economics, and I was an economist for 10 years, and I would do cost justification for nuclear power plants and hydroelectric dams. And then after that, I had a child, and I wanted to stay home with her. So I would write speeches for CEOs that were talking at conferences. And I wrote, you know, the help text when you're doing software, the little help text that comes down. I wrote a lot of help text that people, but, you know, I know, I've always been kind of a nerd.
Huh? Crazy. I love that. I think you should write a help text for me. I could use one of those sometimes.
And then when my daughter was in school, I decided I wanted a job where I got out. So I became a real estate agent, and I became so successful that I built an indoor soccer arena. And then the economy went bad after 9/11, and we failed. And I lost everything. I was living down the street from Deion Sanders. I had so much money. And I moved here and slept in my brother's living room and had $200 to my name. And I was 56 years old. And you know what I did?
What did you do?
I said, I have spent my whole life doing what people expect me to do. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I want to cook. So I started selling food at festivals and the farmers market, and people came and they said, wow, this food's really good. And they started hiring me to cater their parties, and to the movie companies that are making movies in Shreveport started saying, hey, will you come feed our movie stars? And then suddenly, I was a chef. I was a caterer. And I'd been doing this for about a year and a half. And I said, I'm going to open a restaurant. I must really be good because people are buying my food like crazy. And I had $9,000 saved. And I found an old restaurant in a really bad neighborhood. And I took that restaurant and started working on it, and all my friends painted and ripped up carpet. And 2 years later, I'm sitting here with Poppy.
Well, I'm sitting here with you because not only are you everything that you just described, but you are also a James Beard Award winner. Tell us about this James Beard Award you've got.
Well, it was a competition I won. And what happened, I don't have any money, extra money at all, you know, because every dime I make, I put into this restaurant. So, you know, it's so expensive to create something. And so because I don't have any money, I keep saying, what can I do that's free advertising? And I saw a link on Facebook, and it said that the James Beard was having a better burger competition. I'm like, wow, I make a great burger. So I decided I would enter it, and it was a national contest, and there were chefs and restaurants all over the country that were inventing a mushroom burger. And then we had to get people to come in and eat it, and it had to be great because to win, you had to get them to eat this burger a lot, because the more votes you got, the more like that's how you won. People had to vote by eating your burger and Instagramming it to the James Beard Institute. And so I started making it. And I have to tell you something about myself. I don't like mushrooms. So I would try to eat the burger I was inventing, and I would it would just make me ill because it would taste like mushrooms. So I made probably 100 different versions of this burger because I thought, if I can make a burger good enough that I like it with mushrooms, then other people will, and they'll keep coming and eating and voting, and I might be able to win. So probably about number 100, I bit into one of these burgers. I'm like, yeah, this is pretty darn good. I like this. So that was my mushroom burger that I invented for the James Beard competition. And people did like it. And I will say, this was a community effort. You know, people say, Carolyn, you won this James Beard competition. No, Shreveport won this James Beard competition because Shreveport was behind me 100%. So I cannot take credit for winning this contest. I should bring the whole city up to New York because I get to go up to New York. So instead, since I can't bring the whole city up there with me, I'm bringing a representative of the Shreveport, Louisiana Tourist Bureau, and we're going to have a four-day adventure.
You're taking our roving reporter, our dear Louisiana Eats friend, Chris J, with you, huh?
Yes, I'm taking Chris J. Chris J is Shreveport. He and his wife, they have people from the city and the local area. They have their own little business where they get up and they tell their stories. They represent Shreveport to me. So he's going to come up, and what's going to happen when we get up there is it's going to be coinciding with the James Beard Annual Food Conference. So the first day we fly into New York City, Tina, my general manager, and I are going to run around New York finding butchers because, you know, I grind my own 100% chuck, and we have to find butchers to find the meat from. We have to find places to get the buns and to get the right mushrooms and the onions. But they also want us to invent a side dish about what we think the future of food is. So we're going to go and try to find the funnest, coolest places to buy food at. And myself and the other four chefs that were the top chefs in this competition, by the way, we were number two, we're all going to cook for the welcome reception for the James Beard Annual Conference. And what's really cool about being a chef is everyone says, wait, you won getting to cook? But that's what's so cool is I get to cook for all these 125 chefs that are at this conference. Very excited.
Carolyn, our Louisiana Eats listeners are going to be riveted by your story. I know. So please come back and talk to us again.
Poppy, this has been such an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. And anytime you want to talk to me, I would be honored to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carolyn Simmons, chef and owner of Blue in Shreveport. If anyone has challenged the definition of a pastry chef, it's Mindy Siegel. Since opening her runaway success of a restaurant and dessert bar, Hot Chocolate, in Chicago, Mindy has gotten years of confectionery perfection under her belt and a James Beard Award for Outstanding Pastry Chef to boot. After hearing the exciting news that Mindy's poised to launch a brand of chocolate edibles in partnership with the largest medical marijuana producer in Illinois, I just had to call my old friend Mindy and hear more about her plans to take this new industry by storm. I am so thrilled to get the infamous and famous Mindy Siegel of Hot Chocolate fame in Chicago on the telephone with us. Welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Well, Mindy, Hot Chocolate is, what, 10 years old now?
Would you believe I'm going on my 11th year?
Congratulations. And Hot Chocolate has taken you so far. You know, the concept itself, if people are not familiar with it, is that you really wanted a place where people could go for late night desserts. And it turned into so much more, didn't it?
You know, I really wanted to own a restaurant that was through the eyes of a pastry chef. So much times pastry chefs are overlooked, and people don't think that we know that we've got schmaltz, and, you know, we do. And, you know, we know a lot about food because we have to pair our desserts with food. So I, you know, was very excited to think about desserts first and then think of the food and think about what would people want to eat if they ordered my desserts. And that's really the concept of the restaurant. And, you know, I mean, obviously it's grown and it's evolved since then, but that was the original sort of core value concept. So, yeah, I've definitely, new things are on the horizon for me.
Oh, there are some new things on the horizon for you. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to catch up with you, because Mindy Siegel, James Beard award-winning chef, is pairing with the largest medical marijuana producer in Illinois, Cresco Labs. Give us full disclosure. How in the world did this collaboration come about?
Well, first of all, I am a pastry chef, so, you know, I am in the sweet department. And there is such a thing called edibles in the world, and it's just marijuana-infused desserts and food. And things are happening very rapidly in America. We're changing the way we think about marijuana, and a lot of states are now becoming legal. And if they're not legal, a lot of states are becoming legal for medical marijuana purposes. Aside from the fact that I thought it would be a good opportunity for me, obviously,
yeah,
I really felt like making a line of edibles was an extension of what I do in my restaurant, and that's make people happy. And whether I'm making people feel happy because it's in Colorado and people, it's legal, or it's Illinois and it's for people that are very sick and have the right to prescribe and to take edibles as a means to either make them feel better, birth them out of pain, give them an appetite, whatever it is. And I knew that I wanted to be a part of it. So I was approached by multiple people, and one of the companies that I was approached by was Cresco, and it just felt like the right thing for me and the right opportunity for me. And so I took the opportunity, and we made the announcement a couple weeks ago.
Well, everybody knows that butter certainly makes everything better. And as I understand this process, it's butter-infused cannabis oil that is the base of these edibles. So you're not, like, chewing on twigs and leaves and stems.
No.
Right.
It's an extraction through oil, and then the oil is put into the butter. And the way that you regulate it is that you regulate it by the amount of milligrams that you put in per portion of pastry or whatever I'm making. And it's done very scientifically. It's done in a lab. It's regulated. I find it interesting how we react to CBD oil as opposed to how we react to THC.
Uh-huh.
Different percentages of the CBD to the THC and vice versa. And creating a perfect line of edibles that will have multiple different strains and percentages and how I do it is going to be extremely interesting. And I'm applying what I know against what I don't know, and I'm going to teach myself something new.
Perhaps you should explain your perception of the CBD and the THC and what that difference really is in practice.
The CBD oil is the part of the marijuana extraction that helps healing in multiple different ways. The THC is what gives you the euphoric feeling that you get when you ingest marijuana. So CBD oil is actually legal. It's the THC oil that's not yet legal, but it's the CBD oil that has been found to heal in multiple different illnesses, and in particular in people that have seizures. There also are other medicinal qualities to it. So when you combine different percentages of the THC to the CBD, and again, vice versa, you get different healing elements. And that's what I am on the path, and I know multiple people are, and I know are way ahead of me in extracting the right percentage.
What are the first products you're working on?
I'm working on a line of brittles that are very similar to the way that I approach the hot chocolates in my restaurant, and that is I approach my hot chocolates in the way that some people don't like dark chocolate. Some people like milk chocolate. Some people like no chocolate flavor at all, but they like warm sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother hot chocolates are medium, dark, and light. And then we derive hot chocolates throughout these mother hot chocolates. So I'm approaching it the same way as that I'm going to have brittles that are dark, medium, and light. And you have to understand that, like, how I approach my hot chocolates is that they're blends of chocolate. It's not just one chocolate that I use. So there's, like, five or six different levels of milk chocolates and different combinations mixed together with peanut butter and peanut brittle.
Yum.
So that's going to be one of the products.
So this co-branding thing, your name will be on it. So what will it say?
We haven't come up with the name yet, but it will definitely have my name in it. So it will be a brand like Hershey's,
yeah.
And then we will come up with sub-names. You know, there'll be bars, but it'll be under the umbrella of the brand name. I have a feeling I can create a product that's, I don't know, is going to be...
I bet it's going to stand alone.
I mean, I hope so. I mean, I hope it doesn't stand alone. I hope that other people get on the bandwagon and we create a new whole genre of edibles. But, you know, hey, I mean, there's some great people that are doing great stuff now, and they're very knowledgeable. And it's a very fast-growing industry, and I know that I'm just going to be the one of many, many talented people that are going to get into the industry.
Well, Mindy Siegel, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to talk with us on Louisiana Eats. And I hope you will keep us fully abreast of all the exciting developments coming in your life. Congratulations, girl.
Thank you.
Mindy Siegel, James Beard Award-winning pastry chef and owner of Hot Chocolate in Chicago. When we come back from a short break, we'll tell you about a new way to get the flavor of king cake without ever cutting a cake. Stay tuned.
I fell in love again. All things go, all things go. Drove to Chicago. All things know.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. We all know about the importance of bitters as key components in classic and modern cocktails, but what about syrups? Bartender and spirits consultant Max Messier spent much of his career creating remarkable cocktail programs in high-profile bars and restaurants across the country, all the while producing new and innovative syrups, cordials, and tea concentrates. Now living in New Orleans, Max has founded Cocktail & Sons, a company that produces a line of all-natural and handcrafted syrups using South Louisiana ingredients. We recently spoke with Max about his move into the syrups business and about a special new blend coming to a store near you.
So I made bitters back in 08, 09. Made some crazy stuff. But I found that the bitters market over the past couple of years, there's a lot of bitters. There's a place in Los Angeles called Barkeeper. They have a wall of bitters. There's so many of them, and there's guys making bitters out of Oklahoma City now. It's everywhere. I've always been more fascinated by syrups because I felt that the syrups better complemented the spirits themselves, and they act as a modifier, whereas bitters are only accents or tinctures. And I've always worked with different types of sugars in my syrups, and I've always found the viscosity and the texture of those syrups from Thai palm sugar, or just there's a whole range of different syrups, different sugars, and I always liked playing around with different types.
That is one of the very fascinating things about your product, the viscosity of it. It's I guess I could compare it to honey or maple syrup. It's got a slow drip to it, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And one thing that I find with syrups that I made, that I used to use gum arabic, and down here in Louisiana, which people aren't really aware of outside of the state, we have a lot of sugar here. So I found my sugar guy, which is Bob Romero from Three Brothers out of he's outside Lafayette. And when I first started buying his stuff, he's sourcing a lot of the restaurants and bars in New Orleans. And I asked him, I said, "Bob, I love your sugar, but it's too refined. I need something even more raw, more unscrubbed." And he was like, "Okay." So he actually produces for me a very special type of raw, unscrubbed sugar. There's actually big chunks of sugar, like dried sugarcane juice inside of the buckets. And when you tear open the top of the bucket during our processing days in the kitchen, it smells like you just cut down sugarcane. So fresh.
I'm really tickled. When I visited with you last year at the Crescent City Farmers Market, and you gave me the scoop on a new product that you're going to preview that's going to just have, it's a seasonal thing. It's going to be a quick in and out, perhaps.
That is correct.
I Max, I don't know how to tell you this, but with your new product, I think this is a sign you are turning into a real New Orleanian. So what's your new product, Max?
We are launching a king cake syrup.
King cake syrup.
Yes. So I made this very elaborate syrup. And my wife she tried it and she goes, "You know, it's just a cinnamon brioche, right? That's all it really is, what a king cake is." So I went back to the drawing board, did a couple more things, try to caramelize sugar, which you never want to do because it's such a delicate art. If you're trying to do a large batch, it's going to always fail. And went through like 6 or 7 different versions. And then finally my wife tried the last version, which is now in the bottle. And she goes, "Oh my God, you made a king cake.
King cake in a bottle.
In a bottle.
King cake in a bottle."
So I've always been fascinated by the very small baby that's in the cake. I just think it's insane. Like, it just is. And now apparently they're putting them outside of the cake and all this other kind of like weird stuff.
Well, you know, all that litigation.
Yeah, all that stuff. But we decided to put the baby on the plastic ring outside the bottle. And we had discussed about what cocktail to put onto the actual label.
What cocktail recipe you would use?
A carnival punch, because we discovered that people during Mardi Gras, during carnival season, they like to just put everything into a bowl, take it with them, put it in a flask, put it into whatever type of container they have, and take it and watch the parades. So what you essentially need is a bottle of bourbon, rum, or vodka. You need about 3/4 cup of lemon juice. You need a bottle of king cake syrup, which is 8 ounces. You pour it all into a bowl, add some ice, and drink.
And you got a carnival party in a bowl,
that's
huh,
exactly
Max?
That's what it is, yep. And on the recipe, we say, lean against the barricades and enjoy the parades.
Well, we have such a short carnival season this year that I think it's never too soon to start drinking a carnival punch.
I agree.
Are you ready?
We are. We've had it for a pre-sale on our website, cocktailandsons.com, over the Christmas season. And a few people got a little taste here and there of it. But it will be available at retail shops January 6th, which is by tradition for King Cakes.
Of course, the Feast of the Epiphany.
Correct. And then we'll have it at certain Rouse's, Pearl Wine, Dorniak's, Aquistapace across the lake in Covington. We'll have it at all of the Martin Wine Cellars.
Well, you know, we have listeners all over Louisiana. And so anybody who wants to find your syrups, they can go online and find them all, including the king cake syrup.
That's correct, yep.
But Max, are you going to hold to the tradition when the street sweepers go down the streets on Ash Wednesday? Is it all over for the king cake syrup?
It will only be available for wholesale by the stores and on our website until January 31st. And then Mardi Gras starts pretty much on the 3rd, and my wife and I will be in Mexico.
Okay. Okay, Max, luckily right outside the studio door, we've got this absolutely awesome Rouse's Culinary Innovative Center. So here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, we're ready for anything. I got the ice, I got the glasses, you've got the ingredients. What are we gonna make?
Okay, so this is called a Night Tripper.
I wanted to make a stirred cocktail with the king cake syrup. I love Negronis, so I always find that's the most classic style when you want to make a stirred drink. So what we have is we've got some bourbon, we got some dry vermouth, we've got the king cake syrup, and some orange bitters. So all we do is we just take part and a half of bourbon, and then we're going to take 3/4 dry vermouth. I like using Dolin or Nolly Pratt. And then you're going to do 3/4 of the king cake syrup. This adds a nice sweetness.
Oh, it's a beautiful color, too.
Thank you so much. We roast cassia bark with pecan extract and lemon oil. And we do a little bit of Regan's orange bitters right on top, 2 dashes. Add some ice. Take our spoon. Stir it up. You want to garnish it with either a lemon or an orange peel. You want to slice a little peel off and express it down below.
Or you could really have a party and just stick a king cake baby right in there, huh?
Yes, you could. take the baby off the bottle, throw it right into the glass.
Right into the glass. Okay.
Right there, this is called the Night Tripper, named after Dr. John. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, Max. Now, I have to say, not only is that the only king cake I've ever had in a glass, that's the best king cake I've ever had in a glass.
Thank you, Poppy.
Drink up. Happy Cheers. Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Wow. Tastes really, really. I think you must be a mad scientist. Tasting the syrup all by itself, you can even catch, like, the yeasty background of that brioche dough.
Yes, and that was the one challenge I wanted to cross off, was getting that yeasty, bready finish to it, because at the end of the day, it's pretty much a lovely cinnamon brioche. Like, I actually like it with the cream cheese, the fruit. It's really tasty. But I found if you have a king cake in your house, it only lasts for about half a day.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Easy.
King cake in the house, it hardly lasts a day. King cake is such a wonderful ritual for us here in Louisiana. And I have to think that aside from applications in the bar, you must be hearing from people who are doing all sorts of things with your syrups.
Yes, and that's what's really crazy is that at the farmer's market, we had a guy walk up and talk about how he loved the spice demerara and he used it to marinate his pork.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
A woman was buying a bottle of the Oleo every week. I was impressed because I thought she was making a lot of Collins cocktails at home. I discovered she was doing it for salad dressings with a little champagne vinegar. And a guy, she took the mint verbena syrup and soaked his lamb in it overnight, and he said it was amazing.
Max, thank you so much for telling us all about Cocktail & Sons. Congratulations on your success, and happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we talk with Dara Goldstein, editor of the new Oxford Companion to Sugar and Sweets.
You'll find the whole history of humanity, because if you think about sugar more than any other foodstuff, it has influenced the way the world and trade and desire and all of these human attributes have developed.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and by Dickie Brennan's Bourbon House, from oysters to redfish, serving fresh Gulf seafood on Bourbon Street. Also home to the city's largest American whiskey and bourbon collection. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner and Sarah Holtz. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eat studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.